off to find his way to San Jose. Predators and Sharks tomorrow night. 7 o'clock puck drop out in Northern California. Mm. I'll have pregame for you at 6 right here on these airwaves, and they will have their coverage back on Bally Sports starting at 6:30. Remember, the last two games have been TNT games. The suit, Chase McCabe, is up in the Big Apple. Still just wandering around Times Square. I told him last night, dude, you can get a Rolex for like $100. So
yeah, go to the right corner.
Or down the steps, off to the left. You can get a Rolex for $100.
Hey, he's taking a bite out of the Big Apple. He's still chewing.
With Blue Chew. Did he take his Blue Chew to the Big Apple? Oh, boy.
Okay.
It's going to be one of those shows.
Yes.
Whoops.
I was going to say something, but I'm like, no, I'm going to leave it alone.
He did ask, and I said, hey, get yourself a Rolex for $100. He did say, hey, they have earbuds for $30 because Willie lost his on Saturday at the Stadium Series. He lost his earbuds.
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 Are they earbuds or earbuds? What are they called?
Well, Earbuds, the dog that dunks basketballs.
Yeah, Earbud. Yeah, that is. Didn't they have an Earbud too?
There's like Earbud 6.
I was going to say they had more than 2. Wow.
It's like the Fast and Furious movies. Like there's more than you can keep up with.
Did they change the breed of the dog?
I would love for it's like a dachshund or something like that. That's so very unathletic.
Oh, man.
I think it's just like Ugga when, you know, they just kept bringing in new ones that look like Ugga. So, yeah. You know, you do enough of those. Just find one that looks like him. Like Spuds McKenzie, right?
Yeah.
Remember when Spuds was a big deal?
Oh, he was huge.
Huge.
Oh, man. Spud McKenzie was the biggest thing. He was probably the most well-known animal in the world. At that time.
No doubt. That dude was a ladies' man.
Man.
Big time.
Gosh, Bud McKenzie. Man. I wonder
famous,
what happened.
Probably
to
rich.
Spud.
He had all the Bud Light he could handle.
It probably was the Bud Light that. That's why you don't see him no more. He's probably just sit back and like, I can't do this.
Well, he couldn't read his. He kept going Liberty Biberty.
Exactly.
He couldn't read his lines anymore.
Oh, Bud couldn't walk up and down the stairs anymore.
He had a drinking problem. There's a number that he could call.
Exactly. But they let him into it. Hey.
They did.
Hey,
they
let
him.
Old Bud into it.
They
and
let
then
him
dumped
there.
Him like a sack of potatoes. Wrong.
But boy, was he big.
Oh, man. Huge.
He was the craze for a long time.
I think people wanted dogs that looked like Spud McKenzie.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I wonder
you
how many
know.
Dogs that looked like Spud McKenzie sold during that era.
Oh,
or went to a shelter to get a dog that looked just like Spud McKenzie.
I would love to hear from a breeder. I mean, right? I mean, you know it was astronomical.
But that's unfair to the other dogs. People walking in, they're like, we know where they're going. They're looking for another Spud McKenzie lookalike. The other dogs just walk away. Then you got dogs trying to paint their eye. Oh, man.
Man, he was a character.
Oh, man. You got.
You're right. That is a good point. Like, you just know that when they came in, they're like, dang it, man. They're looking for another dog. Looks like Spuds. We got no chance. That was the 80s, right? Wasn't Spuds
yeah,
the 80s?
It was the late 80s, mid to late
80s. I think that sounds right, mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
What was he? He was like a bull. I don't think he was – it wasn't a bull dog. I think
No, it wasn't
bull
a bull dog.
He was like a terrier.
Terrier, yeah.
Yeah, he was like a terrier.
No, Spud McKenzie.
Shepherds were like, man, they're going for a freaking terrier. Domron Pincher over there is like, I got no chance.
The boxer thought he had a chance, but he was like,
I'm not even going to shower today. Like, what's the point? Don't even bathe me. No point.
Oh, man.
Rottweiler's like, you know what? I'm not even using deodorant this whole week. Who cares? Nobody's going to pick me.
Oh, man.
Looks like Amari Cooper is not going to get picked by the Cowboys. reports are that they're moving on. He's going to be a cap casualty.
Well,
what do you think about that?
When you're making $20 million and you're only giving him 800 yards. See, and that's the thing that it goes back to the Julio thing. Why do other people figure it out and release a guy, but the Titans can't figure it out?
Well, because they're aren't they kind of locked in?
They're not locked in. I mean, if they do it after June 1st, the cap hit is not as big. But again, you're paying a guy that much money, and more than likely, the trend is he will be injured again next year.
Julio?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, if you're asking me to slide my chips one way or the other, I mean, come on.
Not sliding them toward Julio.
Right. Who's sliding their chips that he's going to play 17 games next year?
Mm-mm.
I mean, if you do and you win, good for you, because there's no way I would. I mean, how could you? I mean, this is not just a flash. I mean, this is how it ended in Atlanta. This is why they moved on from him. This is why they were willing to trade him.
Exactly. They're on a hook for this. Well, they're not on a hook. But they got to pay him 14 next year, 14 a year after, and then it goes down significantly after that. But, I mean, they can't keep him. There's no way, and I mean no way. Well, they're paying him 11 next year. Excuse me. I'm sorry. The cap hit is 14. And then 11 after that, and the cap hit is 14 again. There's no way they can pay this man $11 million for what he did last year. There's no way.
Honestly, you could pluck anybody out there to put up those numbers and pay them $600,000.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wonder how much money because that could be a reason why, you know, they didn't make a big fuss. How did Atlanta pay some of the salary for last year? No.
No.
So all of that was the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't see them. I don't get it. I mean, if I would love for him to be healthy, and I would love to see the old Julio Jones, but at 33, we're not going to get the old Julio Jones. And no. It's crazy because other teams can figure this out. You know, the Cowboys, who we rag on all the time, they can say, listen, we're not paying this guy. He's been hurt too much. We're not paying him $20 million. He's a good receiver, but we're not paying him $20 million. We're going to release him.
Well, it also helps that they've got other weapons.
Yeah, they got other weapons. But, I mean, okay, they got Lamb. We got A.J. Brown. Who are you going to take, Lamb or A.J. Brown? I'm taking A.J. Brown.
Yep.
Who else do the Cowboys? They got a few other guys, but they're not like these marquee explosive guys.
True.
So I if the Titans feel they're stuck with Julio because they don't have anyone else, then that's their fault. I heard Joe and Rex talking this morning about Reynolds. They went out and paid a price for him, got him, and never played him for whatever reason. He was hurt, I understand that.
Didn't pay him much. I mean, that was the thing. That's why I was so blown away by it. It's not like it was the most friendly, wide receiver friendly deal you could possibly get. In today's game, they were paying him peanuts.
Yeah.
Like, why move on? Unless obviously something was going on behind the scenes. By the way, that Michael Gallup was the guy that he's also a pretty good receiver.
He's a good receiver, but again, he's
Cedric Wilson, do you like him?
I guess they're projecting. They're projecting. They're saying, listen, we got Lamb. And Lamb didn't show up last year either.
At times, no.
You know, he was just – he was a guy that was off and on, off and on. So they must really feel either, you know, it's been too much with Amari Cooper in regards to his injuries, or they feel, listen, these younger guys can step up and we'll go and draft another guy.
We're going to get we're going to talk a little bit later about the receivers running at the combine. It's something that you've brought up this week. I want to get your reaction to that. We're actually going to talk to somebody after you just made the list who's up at the combine. with Pro Football Focus and break down a lot of the activity. There was a lot of chatter about yesterday with the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the tight ends at the combine yesterday. So that'll be coming up after you just made the list at 12:30 today. But when we come back, we're going to head over to West End. Coach Stack, we're going to talk to Jerry Stackhouse as they finish up their regular season on Saturday and then get ready for the SEC tournament down in Tampa. So we'll talk to Jerry Stackhouse on the other side as you listen to the DDC on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Gorgeous day here in Middle Tennessee. Man, enjoy your Friday. Darren McFarland and Derek Mason with you. Don't forget the Nashville Predators and Bridgestone Arena appreciate and recognize military, first responders, and their families. Your company can help fund tickets for these heroes during Ford Military Week, the week of March 7th. Of course, today is the 4th, so next week will be the week to help, right? Help, and Ford is going to have Military Week. Learn more about the Heroes Salute Program at NashvillePredators.com/Military Week. Let's head over to West End. They're about to wrap up their regular season and then head down to Tampa for the SEC tournament. Coach Stack is on the line. Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt men's basketball coach. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. How you guys?
We're doing fantastic. You know, we had you played for a long time, and now that you're a coach and you're on the other side, we had Kelly Harper on yesterday. Of course, the women SEC women's tournament here in town this weekend and right now, and Lady Vols coach, and she was talking about at her press conference how she likes to eat Girl Scout cookies. She was asked if she has superstitions or anything, and she just said she enjoys Girl Scout cookies. She didn't bring any. She's on the hunt for Girl Scout cookies. Did you have superstitions or any, you know, a game day routine as a player, or did it carry over as a coach?
Gummy bears, man.
Gummy bears, all right.
Yeah. It started way back when I was like midget league, 10 to 12. I mean, really little. My mom used to go to a place called the Peanut Shack and bring me some gummy bears back, and I thought that was my, you know, that was my magic. So I had them all the way through high school, college. Man, I had to have me some gummy bears. I still eat them, so.
Well, you should, because it's worked. So how many do you keep around? Like, at one, you know, like right now, like how many do you have around? Like a whole bag, or how does that
yeah,
work?
Yeah, man, like I'm real picky. I mean, they got to be the Haribo. You know, that's not all gummy bears are created equal. So I have to make sure I get so, but now the Haribo, I've done those. Some of the Haribo cherries, I like them now. I mean, I shouldn't be talking about eating all this candy, but that's still my, I guess it deals with my nerves, give me a little sugar rush, you know what I'm saying, get me going.
D-Mace, you could probably relate to that. We've had a lot of fun on the show over the years. Coach Derek used to bring in basically a sack full of candy like it was Halloween every day. That was what he was going to eat on during the show.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, that sugar tooth ain't going nowhere.
It ain't going nowhere, man. I gave it to my kids as well. So whenever I run out, they got some in the stash too. So, man, I'm guilty of that one for sure.
How have you handled with your guys three incredibly tough losses, right? They fought to the end, you know, a play here, a play there. We could be talking about, you know, three straight wins on top of, you know, I guess throwing the Texas A&M game, four straight wins. But you know how this works, especially in this conference. It's a razor's edge, right? And a play here, a play there can cost you the game. How is the mood of the team? What have you guys been discussing after three tough losses?
But no, man, I just think that we know that we're very close, and we've been doing it to ourselves. I mean, we're not ones to try to try to hide from the reality of, you know, stuff that we know and we've been taught. You know, when you get those moments, you have to find a way to execute. It's not, and like I said, you can't explain every single situation, you know, in the course of a commercial break, you know, just for the things that we've talked about over the course of not just this year, and it's been over the last couple of years with some of our guys, man. So it's just about, you know, until we get those moments to where we come through. I mean, that's where you see that competitive greatness that we talk about, and that's where you have to display it. And in those moments, quite frankly, we've we've come up small in some of those. And then it just seems like that at the end of the game. But I like to think that a lot of things that happened in the first half and, you know, the beginning of the second half are a lot of the reasons. Again, just things that we know how to do. We were a little bit, you know, more attention to detail. And especially in those, you know, those late moments, you know, it just seemed like we kind of become paralyzed by those moments a little bit. And we just got to have a breakthrough. And I think that we're right there. We see it. We watch it. We talk about it. Again, we don't hide from it. Our guys are still upbeat. They know that we, you know, we're doing a lot of things right. We just got to find a way to close things off. I mean, and it's just one of them. It's like we had four or five different things that just didn't go our way. But we got to create that for ourselves. But you know, it's not like, you know, we got it. I mean, it's just amazing to me when you talk about guys feel like they lost confidence, they quit, man. You know, I mean, I don't know. We don't deal with those type of guys. We don't have those type of men. We come in with the mindset that we're going to get better and, you know, watch the mistakes that we made, try to go over them, you know, and hopefully that we see those opportunities again, that we take advantage of them. And, you know, whether that's, you know, inbounding the ball, going up to the free throw line, making free throws, or staying, you know, locked in to our defensive possessions, you know, throughout the whole possessions, you know, closing it off with a rebound, played in, you know, a lot of those last possessions in that game against Florida, man, we played great defense and just didn't come up with the rebound. So, I mean, it's just a matter of want to, again, that competitive greatness that we talk about doing it, you know, in those biggest moments, and we just got to find a way to figure it out. But I think we're confident. We know that we could, you know, win six straight if we do what we need to do, or we could, if we don't, then we stand the, you know, for chance to come in. But our guys are, they know that they worked hard, and hopefully there's something special for them here before our season's done.
I said on Monday's show when we were talking about your game against Florida, I said I watched Mike White's interview with the SEC Network afterwards, and he said that, you know, this Vanderbilt team right here is the most improved team in the league. And I remember saying on the show, and Derek, you'll remember, mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was cool. I said, I know Coach Stack won't probably, you know, he's in it to win, and he doesn't want, you know, attaboys. But in all, you know, what do you say? I mean, obviously, this team is much improved, and here we are talking about three tough losses, but they're fighting to the end. On one hand, you could probably appreciate that comment. On the other hand, I know you're a competitor, and you want it to go your way.
No, we should win those games. I mean, all three of those games, again, we look back at, you know, our mistakes and our opportunities that we had that we didn't seize and didn't take advantage of. But, I think it's, you know, it's good. I mean, I think, we, you know, we've made improvements, and we've done it from within. Right? I think that's the key about this season, and even with, you know, the close losses and all that we've had, we've done that without being whole, you know, for what we, you know, had envisioned coming into the season. But, you know, again, we still had enough to get it done. That's always been my, you know, my message, that we've had enough to get it done. So we have to, you know, look in the mirror and accept the fact that we are where we are because we've done it to ourselves. We had opportunities to easily, you know, be in the top five of the league. You know, so and I think that's where our guys, hopefully they use that for motivation. But, you know, even the guys that the transfers, you know, those guys have been banged up for most of the year. You know, Liam Robbins and Rodney Chapman. So what we've been able to do, we've done it from within. You know, just our development of the guys that we brought in here as freshmen, and they're continuing to grow and continuing to build. And I think that, again, it's just about getting over the hump. But I think when we do, we'll have something here that's sustainable, because we're not trying to reinvent ourselves every week just because we have a loss or a tough loss or this and that. We know who we are. We know what we try to be. I'm gonna play guys because we're building something for the future. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not going to just run our five. We got to have development. Guys got to get some moments, and it might in some people's mind, it might have cost us a game because we played some freshmen, some extended minutes, and some critical times. But it's going to do us good in the long run with what we're trying to build, and not just for you know some type of instant gratification. Because we, you know, I know I have the support to build this program the way it needs to be, and I'm just going to continue to do it that way.
We'll talk with Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt's men's basketball head coach. Now, Coach, you just spoke on, you know, the injuries that you guys have had throughout the season, transfer that you counted on that have been in and out of the lineup. With that being said, have you had to change what you wanted to do prior to the season to now based on these guys being in and out of the lineup because of injury?
Well, I mean, I just think when you see those guys and, you know, the impact that they've had when they played, when Ronnie Chapman played, again, it was no secret that, you know, we turned the corner. When he went back out, we take a, you know, kind of maybe a step back because we just don't have that secondary ball handler behind Scotty and another ball handler that allows Scotty to be more of a two-guard force. Trey is growing, you know, as a point guard, but his biggest strength is shooting the basketball. And, you know, playing him off the ball, you know, Rodney gives us that, you know, that defensive presence. You know, when I recruited him this summer, I was like, man, I think you could be the gold standard of what I feel like a point guard of Vanderbilt should look like, from how he defends, how his understanding of the game, how he sees the floor, he takes the timely right shots. But more so than anything, it's just his leadership. So, again, that, you know, that not having that, you know, leaves a lot to be desired on what the possibilities could be. I mean, you saw what Leon Robbins has been able to do, you know, since he's been back. It gives us a dynamic that we hadn't had since I've been here, from a big that can, you know, can catch lobs, can play on the post, can space out the three and a shot blocker. But, again, that's, you know, that's the game, you know, and the injuries are part of the game. That's just no excuse for us. I mean, that without those guys, we've had opportunities that we should have been able to take care of, and that's on all of us. That's on, you know, coaches. I mean, you know, you beat yourself about anything. I mean, should I have called this right play? Should I have done this? Should I have done that? That's just the world that we live in, and we appreciate that and accept that. But at the end of the day, you got to make plays, and I think that that's where we're continuing to grow our talent to, you know, be able to, you know, withstand. Like I said, you can call all the great plays that you want to, but sometimes somebody's got to go make a play. And I think that's where we're continuing to our talent pool is great to develop from within and see the growth in the guys that, you know, the Miles Studies, the Quentin Millar Browns, the Jordan Wrights. I mean, all those guys have, Trey, Thomas, Scotty, all those guys have gotten better and gotten stronger. It's amazing just how their bodies have changed over the last couple of years, and they're going to continue to get better. And our freshmen this year, same thing. They're going to continue to get better. They're going to continue to get stronger, have a better understanding of what we're trying to get accomplished on both ends of the floor. And I think when that comes together, then it's just going to be something that we'll all be, you know, be proud of and proud of the way we built it and know that we did it the right way.
Now, I got one last question for you, Coach, before I know you got to get back to get prepared for Ole Miss. And with that being said, you guys didn't play them during the season. Is it an advantage or a disadvantage to going to a tournament not having played an opponent?
You mean like, Ole Miss?
Yeah, uh-huh.
No, I mean, yeah, I think for us, I mean, like, this team is, we watch everybody, and now, like, this last game of the season, we're going down there. It's their senior night. They're going to be jacked up. So I think it's a great, like, first game of the tournament for us. I mean, it's like we're on the road, even though Tampa's more of a neutral site. We've been one of the teams that have been pretty good, you know, on the road. So I think for us to go in and have this mindset of, you know, because we, you know, we make adjustments, we play different styles depending on the teams that we play. You know, I think we really built for the tournament because we, you know, our guys have an understanding whether they go out and execute it, but they do have an understanding of what we want to try to get accomplished, and they're pretty good at getting game plans on the fly. So, again, like I said, I'm excited about the opportunity, whether we've seen them before or not. I mean, it's kind of when you've been around this league two or three times, it's not a whole lot of difference than what these guys, what they try to get accomplished on both ends of the floor. Some guys mix it up a little more defensively. You know what they're going to do. Kermit's going to throw some stuff at you. But offensively, I think we have an understanding of all these teams in our league and what their identity is. And now it's just going back and locking in on them for one game and see if we can get it done.
Kermit's still going to sweat a lot during the game, so it's that has not changed over the years for sure. I did want to ask you real quick on the way out. You know how this works. I mean, you get a kid like a talented kid like Scottie Pippen Jr. We see this around the country all the time. Talented kids, and whether the bounce to take the next step in their career or come back for another year. And everybody thinks coming back for another year is always going to be magical, and it's not always magical. You know that, Coach, but his has been. I mean, he has lived up to coming back and improving and just getting better and better. He's an All-American candidate. He's averaging, over 20 points a game this season. He's been on fire here of late. You know how this works. I mean, what is it about him? You know the makeup better than us, that he was able to come back and live up to everything and be a key contributor to this team, an important piece to this team.
No, man, just speaks to who he is, man. He's a great, great player for us, and I think he's going to be a great player at the next level too. I mean, just going, but I just think for us, him coming back, and we wanted to win. We said we were going to go out and get the pieces around him to help them, have a special year. And, two of those pieces, obviously, I hate to say the word, didn't pan out. It just didn't pan out the way that we envisioned them for the whole season with Rodney and Lim. So he had to still do a lot on his own, man, but he hadn't complained. He's a sponge. He's still learning. He's a great teammate. These guys get along great. They spend a lot of time, together away from the floor. He's right at the center of that. I mean, when you come down for lunch or dinner, or you're having some type of team function, we're at my house or something, he's the last one to leave. It's like he's just, he enjoys being around these guys. So, I mean, I think he's done enough to, he didn't really get invited to a lot of those combines and stuff last year, even though he went and tested the water. He'll definitely get those invites this year, and I think he'll go in and blow him away with just his understanding of the game and how he can, share the floor with other good players. So, it could be a possibility, again, that we probably won't have him back. But, if he decides that this is something that he still wants to get accomplished because we got, Liam back for another year and stuff, man, obviously I'm going to be probably one of the most excited people in Nashville. but the reality of it is that, he's probably going to he served himself well with the way, he's handled himself both on the court and off the court. And he's going to get those opportunities. But nah, man, he's been as well advertised as, he came in with a lot of hype as player of the year. And I think he's lived up to that. And if we would have been probably a few more in the win column, then, he could really be in the conversation more so than some of the guys that they're talking about. But nah, he's great person on the court and a great person off the court, man. Just, that cool that you see is really what you get. I go at him as hard as anybody after these games because, again, a lot of it is on him, and he accepts it and he tries to come back and be better. So I got nothing but the utmost respect for Scotty and what he's done for this program since he's been here. I hope it continues, but I'm realistic and know that, man, at the same time, they're fungible assets. We're going, even though he's going to be a lot to replace, the reality of it is you have to do it at some point, and we'll keep this train moving.
Well, if he does tell you he's coming back for another year, that's going to feel like a truckload of gummy bears in your driveway, huh? Honking the horn, telling him this is your stash.
Haribo truck just pulled up.
Coach, really appreciate the visit. As always, go get him in Oxford, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate you, fellas. Thanks.
All right. That is Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt men's basketball coach. We'll come back more on the other side. The DDC, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Darren McFarland, Derek Mason, Elijah Campbell, Hillside Medical Game Studios. Appreciate Jerry Stackhouse for joining us. I did not know he was into the gummies like that. He is all about the gummy bears.
Yeah.
Where is that in your ranking of candy?
Gummies? I'm not a big gummy guy. He's right.
I don't remember.
Not all gummies are created equal either.
Mm-hmm. He had a very specific – what is the name? Is it
Hambro?
Haribo.
Haribo. Hambro.
Hairbo. Is it Hairbo?
H-A-R-I-B-O.
Yeah.
Hairbo.
Hairbo.
I thought it was Haribo, but
that's what I thought it was.
I don't know if I've ever gotten like clarification on what the actual pronunciation of that company is. I just know them as the closest to Rock Hard in terms of gummy bears that are produced on the market. Hmm.
Yeah, he was very specific. He made a point to bring them up. I mean, maybe he was looking for the endorsement, you know?
Somebody, you know, some people like the more firm gummies. Some people like the more softer gummies. If I'm eating gummies, I like the more softer gummies.
I am too. My jaw's not like that.
I thought most gummies were soft. I'm not a big gummy person, but I figured that most of them were soft.
Nah, he said it. All gummies are not created equal.
I know. I don't want to get in that conversation. I'm out of my league. I'm out of my gummy league. Yeah. I just don't know enough.
This is a conversation for gummy experts, okay?
Yes.
D-Mac, step aside, please.
Leave the room.
Leave the room. We're talking gummies. Leave the room.
You've been voted off Gummy Island. Get out of here. So in all seriousness, so let's get back to – we had our first bubble watch yesterday. Mm-hmm. Willie and Elijah put it together. So let's – Elijah, get in this conversation. Let's talk about this Vanderbilt team. It was pretty interesting how he – did you notice there at the end he's like, look, if we do things right, like we can win. We can win. I think he said six games, counting obviously probably the game in Oxford tomorrow night. I think that's a 5 o'clock tip, by the way, if you're looking to take in that game tomorrow night as Vanderbilt closes out their season. But what do we think of the way they're constructed? Three tough losses. Mm-hmm. Are they a team that can make some noise in Tampa? We've been talking about it for a week of, you know, it's one thing to bring up, you know, Auburn or Kentucky or Tennessee or Arkansas, those teams as teams that could get hot and win it. But is Vanderbilt a team that could truly get hot and make noise in Tampa?
I think they can. I mean, if what they envisioned their roster to be majority of those guys are back. Liam, the big center in the middle. If he's back, healthy, ready to go, which I believe he is, right? He should be back, ready to go.
Yeah, he'll definitely be playing in the tournament.
Elijah. So they have him. They have Scotty. They envisioned this roster at the beginning of the year of transfers and guys that they already had. Okay, if they go into the tournament and these guys are healthy – then based on what they've been able to do throughout the season, they've lost a lot of close games. Mm-hmm. And having those guys on the court for you, I think there is a possibility. I mean, going a six-game run, that's tough. But I can see them winning, you know, two or three games in a tournament and really setting themselves up to whether it be further along in the SEC tournament or next year. You know, they can go out on a good note. Now, if they lose in the first round, that's not good for anybody. You know, that's not good for Vanderbilt heading into next season. They're, you know, the attitude heading to the next season. But if they can win a few games here, the attitude heading into the next season is a lot better. Granted, if Scotty stays, it's much better. But if he leaves, then at least they can say, okay, we ended the season on a good note. We add some players, some recruits or transfers. We can be at this level again heading to next season. I'm not talking about the whole season level. I'm talking about the last, if they go on like a three-game win streak here.
You can flirt with the NIT that way. I mean, you beat Ole Miss, and you win at least a game in the SEC tournament. Like, if you're in the NIT based off, like, what this program's been the last 4 or 5 years, that is a huge win for this team, especially considering that your big man was out for almost the entire year. I mean, he hadn't been able to be a factor until February. And if you get that kind of context coming into the season and knowing that your only one center is Quentin Melora Brown, who has – obviously improved a lot as the season's gone along, and he's actually made himself a valuable part of this team. Much credit to him, but he was the only real center that you had to play. Like, not any other team in the SEC has had to kind of deal with that thinness of the forward roster. If you can get to the NIT, it's a really admirable season given the circumstances. But I think they beat Ole Miss. I just don't think Ole Miss is any good at all. they've had a really tough year, and they could be an eyesore to watch at times.
Like, oh, they can win a game for sure.
Yeah, and I think if they can pull that off, like the NIT resume at that point actually looks pretty good. You're over 500 in the season. You would get win 7-8 SEC games. The SEC is going to get 5-6 teams in, depending on what other teams do in the SEC tournament. Like, they can open the door for them to be a low seed in the NIT, which would be a pretty good way to end the season.
They could get to Friday. They could.
Yeah, a lot of us can match up dependent, too.
I mean, I think depending on what seed are they currently right now? I know they're going to be on that Wednesday session because those are seeds 11 through 14.
Yeah, it looks like they're 11. They're kind of at the 11 mark. And okay, with a win against Ole Miss,
they would play the 6 seed.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, they're going to be 11 regardless because they're 2 games behind Texas A&M.
There you go. So they're going to play the 6 seed. I mean, you're telling me they can't beat the 6 seed? I think they could.
And it looks like
I said, they could get to Friday.
The 6 is who? Arkansas?
Florida.
Florida?
And, I mean, they should have. They had Florida beat. They had them beat in Nashville.
They did. I mean, that's the game we were just talking about. So, obviously, Florida popped a 3 with 7 seconds to go and won the game. But could you beat Florida? Yeah, you could. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. In fact, next week, before they get cranked up, I know I said Vince is going to – that's where he's from, the Tampa area. So he's going to go down there. He'll join us on Monday, and we'll talk about the Vols and their chances and get everybody ready for the men's tournament after the women wrap up here. But I think it's next week, Elijah. We need to go down to Athens because I read a really interesting article last night, like why Georgia basketball – stinks. Like, why can't they win at Georgia? Like, you know, they just won the national championship in football. They've won, you know, they've got other programs, you know, there on campus that win consistently or have won it all in their sport. And yet the basketball, it seems like doesn't matter who they hire. They like remember like just think about it. The last two hires everybody has deemed home runs, like great hires for Georgia, right? Mm-hmm. And Mark Fox and Tom Crean. And what does that produce them?
Absolutely
like
nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing for like a decade. Nothing.
What I can't figure out is how can Tom Crean not retain players? Like, here's the players that transfer out.
Did he have like 9 kids transfer out?
Oh, and not just those players. Katie Johnson, kid who starts for Auburn right now. Auburn, pretty damn good. Xavier Wheeler. Starting for Kentucky right now, Tumani Kamara, a leading scorer, one of the leading scorers for Dayton, who could be an at-large team in the NCAA tournament. Justin Kier, who is starting for Arizona and had a big game for Arizona last night against Stanford. Those are the guys who left the program last year to this.
And they're all making impacts somewhere else
on really good teams.
Well, so what does that say?
That points to the head coach.
Exactly. I mean, it has to. Well, and the rumors are that obviously he's not going to be retained, that Tom Crean's not going to make it. I think it was Slayball that wrote the article. So we may have to get him on next week to talk about the SEC tournament, but more importantly, talk about Georgia basketball, why they just are – they have no impact in this league whatsoever, and they're trying. They're trying to – you know, built interest down there. When Tom Crean first arrived, they were getting people before COVID. They were getting people to show up to their games. People were excited.
He had Anthony Edwards for a year.
Yeah, right. The number one pick overall.
And that team was atrocious.
But I don't know. So pretty interesting. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up the first hour of the DDC next. Joe Rexroad will join us to kick off the second hour. We're going to talk about his time spent at the Combine in Indianapolis. And what he made of John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. When they spoke to the media, we'll talk about what he thinks about this Titans offseason. So we'll do that to kick off the second hour of the program. You just made the list at high noon, and then we're going to head to Indy at 12:30, pick 6 in the final hour. So a loaded program here on this Friday. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason with you. By the way, before we get into Combine Talk close out the first hour, I want to say congrats to my man, Crazy Legs, Craig Smith, 3rd career hat trick last night for the Bruins in Vegas. I was watching some of that game. Game was on ESPN, and Crazy Legs. Craig had a hat trick last night in Boston's 5-2 win, so good job by him. And I was trying to see Last night, the Wild unfortunately won in Philadelphia, so that was not good news. But anyway, Craig Smith, 3 career hat tricks. Pretty impressive. So, all right, let's talk about the news that was circulating out of there. There's been a lot of news, and you brought it up about the 40 time. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, all the talk was 8 wide receivers, sub 4-4, 40-yard dash. So what did you make of the 40 times yesterday with the receivers, with everybody saying, one, everybody knew it was going to be a good class, but two, now we're seeing there's some speed. But you kind of feel like, yeah, well, that's great, but can these guys run routes? Can they catch balls? How did you feel about the news coming out about, you know, 8 wide receivers yesterday running sub 4-4?
It's going to happen. You're going to have, you know, whether it's 2 or 3 4-3 guys, you're going to have a 4-2 guy, you know, and then you're going to have, again, like I said yesterday, then you're going to have guys that are 4-4, whether it's 4-4-1, 4-4-5, but they're in that 4-4 range. You're going to have those guys. But what are they beyond their speed? You know, I need to see, does that speed translate on the field? Again, you can, the way they run these 40s now, it's all about technique. They figured it out. You can shave some of your time. You can't go from a 4, you know, from a 5 to a 4, you know, a 5 flat to a 4 flat. Can't do that. When I say about technique, it's, okay, a guy that's a 4-4-5, he can possibly get it down to a 4-4, somewhere in 4-4-5 or 4-4-3. It's technique. It's, you know, how you get your start off and how you use your technique from there. But after that, I want to see how these guys run routes, how they get in and out of breaks. You got a lot of guys that can run fast down the field. But then when you ask them to stop, you know, run fast, drop your hips at 15 yards and come back to the ball, they have a hard time doing that, you know. Or speed cutting the in route, they have a hard time doing that, you know. So I want it, to me, speed, yes. You got to have some semblance of or resemblance of speed. You have to, whether it's a 4-5 or 4-3. You got to have some. When I put on a tape, I got to be able to see someone that's running away from people, that shows speed on the field. So you got to have that. But I want to see everything else. I want to see how you get in and out of your routes. How do you track the football? How do you catch the ball in traffic? Because you could be a 4-1 guy and can't catch the ball in traffic. You could be a 4-1 guy and can't catch the ball coming back to the ball when someone's on your back. Again, they use it to kind of, you know, separate guys from other guys, because at the end of it, you know, at the end of it all, your top 5 guys or 7 guys, what separates them? Well, they're going to use the speed aspect. How fast is this guy based on, how fast is this guy compared to the number 7 guy that's on our board? You know, we got these top 7 receivers, and they all can be drafted in the first round. But what separates them? Because they all seem similar. Well, the speed separates them. Well, if that's the case, then 9 times out of 10, they're going to go to the guy with the speed. I don't look at it that way. I just want to put tape on the film. I mean, put tape on the television, and let me see this guy perform against top-notch competition. I don't care if he's fast or slow. Let me see how he performs when that number 1 DB is put in front of him or everybody shifts to his side. Let me see him perform then. If he ain't performing, then, you know, we're going to go to the next guy. I don't care how fast he is. Speed can get you in trouble. Speed can have you drafting guys and end up looking around, and he hasn't done anything for you in 3 years. Titans, they know something about that, drafting a guy based on speed and not getting anything out of him.
Well, I was going to say, you know, most are not going to turn out to be Tyreek Hill. And I'll be honest, when they drafted Tyreek Hill, it was like, well, that's great, but how many burners have we heard over the years that teams drafted and, you know, they can't catch a cold? And so they don't really ever amount to Hill beans. Tyreek Hill has kind of changed that narrative, right? But there have been a lot of really good to my knowledge, Michael Thomas is not known for speed, is he?
No.
I don't believe his. He dazzled anybody at the combine with this burner speed. I get it. He's been out for a while. But when he was playing, Michael Thomas was arguably the best receiver in the league. Is DeAndre Hopkins, was he a burner at the combine? I don't think so. I don't think he was a burner. I know going way back, because I know we've had these conversations in the past, Jerry Rice certainly didn't wow anybody.
No.
With his 40 time. And I get it. Those are probably, you know, exceptions to rule. Like, yes, you can always find that, the outliers, right? But I'm just saying, most of the time, these guys that we've heard about speed, how many times did it translate to Sundays where that speed literally did kill defenses? That speed did, you know, blow the top off the defense, and they just, you know, were able to have this incredible weapon. Cooper Kupp, did he crush it this year because of his speed?
No.
Did we get on here every Monday going, wow, that guy, 12 catches, 170 yards and two touchdowns. Man, that burner, Cooper Kupp, defenses just can't keep up with him. I don't remember us saying that.
No, we didn't. But he's a technician. He's mastering his craft, and it has nothing to do with his speed. Because, again, if I have a fast guy, you have a good defense, I can neutralize his speed. I can. He has to figure out now, since they got guys playing on top, you know, playing over me, meaning the safety, and that corner playing, how do I now get open? Well, I gotta run my routes. I gotta be a technician. And that's why Cooper Kupp is so good. That's why DeAndre Hopkins is so good. That's why OBJ is so good. Because they don't just rely on their speed. They rely on their attention to detail and being route technicians. Give me a guy that can run a hell of a route and get open over a guy with speed. Now, if he has it all, that's great, Tyreek Hill. But if he has one or the other, well, give me the guy that can run a route and get open.
Well, give me the comp to Tyreek Hill in the league. Give me the guy who's the closest to Tyreek Hill.
Speed-wise?
Yeah, and productive.
Oh, man.
See my point?
Nobody.
The fact that
nobody's
you
as
think
fast as Tyreek Hill.
Well,
nobody is as fast as Tyreek Hill.
I'm not saying, but a comp, as in a comparable.
Uh-huh.
It's not easy, right? Because there really aren't. That's the whole point. The comps. It's not like the league is littered with burners and superstar receivers. I mean, it's just not. I think to your point, what you said yesterday on the show, I think it's probably overused or it's overhyped. It's talked up too much. I think we talk it up too much when really when you get down to it, yeah, is speed important? Yeah, of course. But, I mean, there's not a guys out there. When we get – like Velus Jones, I don't know. We can get in this. We don't have time right now.
Mm-hmm.
Velus Jones Jr., what did he run? Like a just over a 4.3 yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hello? But I don't know. You watch him this year. I think we talked to him at SEC Media Days. What do you think of him?
He's okay.
Okay. Is that going to shoot him up three rounds because of that?
No.
Okay.
Again, I think you just put, you know, you want to be able to, and I know we got to get out of here quickly. You want to be able to, if he runs a fast time, look at the film and say, okay, the film matches the time at the combine. That's what I want to see. The film matches. Yep. Both of them matches. If they don't match, then I'm moving the other way.
All right, we'll come back. We'll start hour number two. We'll talk to Rexy, Joe Rexroad. That's next.